Welcome to the final broadcast of the Chronicle on Right Radio. I'm your host, Andre Spence.
And I am Ganga Rajesh. We have a range of stories. It's been 2 years since the invasion of Ukraine. And the Whitby Station Gallery is displaying photos of buildings, some of which no longer stand.
If you've ever seen anyone walking with a service dog, you might be surprised in how they help people deal with barriers. We'll have more later on a dog that's helped people with things such as anxiety and depression.
Ontario Tech University is bringing game right to your doorstep, with games you have never heard of or played. All that and more coming up. Hey Andre, have you gotten used to being back to Canada after your trip on Reading Week?
It took me a while. Took me a bit to get used to Canada again, but I think I'm finally there. But we actually have two people who went with me on the trip, Dylan Irving and Daniel Opacinas. They'll be with us live, in person, to speak with us about their experience.
Wow, that is so exciting. Now, let's get into the show.
The Durham College Marketing and Sales Competition saw a few special winners this year. Two first-year students and a mother who's returning to school. I went and brought the story.
Is kind of what we would expect them to deal with in the outside world. So it's great to see what they're thinking, how they can think on their feet.
One person that was in the sales competition last year, he actually is still with us today.
Whitby campus will see an addition of a new program next year. This one is aimed at people looking to work specifically in long-term care, specifically in food service. As Clayton Domain reports, it's a growing field for people interested in working in healthcare.
The Nutrition and Food Service Management program comes to Durham College this September. Among 13 new programs, it is the only full-time program that will be offered at the Whitby campus. The program will prepare students for a career in food service management and planning, focusing on healthcare settings such as long-term care homes.
For us, it's about changing the landscape and how we sort of see institutional cooking and institutional foods management around the food that's served and the value of the food and understanding the food that is served there.
According to O'Brien, new programs undergo an intense and lengthy review to prove their viability. Then they're vetted by researchers and the college's board of governors.
There's a lot of government funding coming into long-term care for nutritional support in long-term care. So I think it's important that we sort of lead the way in that. So the program is built on obviously knowing nutrition, food service management, human resources, things like that.
In addition to increasing nutrition and food literacy from farm to table, the program will also minimize waste and give back to the community. The campus's biodigester recycles food waste from culinary labs and farming, then turns it into a nutrient-dense soil byproduct that goes back into the fields. Faculty work with community groups and campus associations to ensure food produced in the program is used in the campus's business and academic labs. Students in the new program will continue this work.
We worked with the region of Durham through COVID and fed the homeless. And now with Community Care Durham, we did a farmer's market last summer and we have plans to do that again. We worked on a project where we put gardens in urban green spaces at a warehouse, and the food that was grown there was donated back to Community Care Durham, and that was with an industrial partner, Colliers, that asked us to reinvent green spaces.
The new two-year program launches this fall. In Oshawa, reporting for The Chronicle, I'm Clayton Demain.
Students sometimes find themselves on campus late night after dark. They're studying, they have classes, or extracurricular commitments. Walking to their car or bus late at night can cause some anxiety. Will McAllister tells us more about the Campus Walk program, aimed at making them feel safe.
The Campus Walk program is provided by trained student teams. On request, they will walk students or staff to their car, residence, or other locations on weeknights.
This is a service that we provide, and it's actually student-led. It's actually employed by students that comes through the Student Works program.
Trimble says the goal is to ensure everyone feels safe at all times.
Call upon security, ask if the campus walk service is available. If they are, they will give you a walk to wherever you need to go. What's also very important is that when campus walk isn't available, this service will also be provided by security. So 24 hours a day, you want to go anywhere on campus and you're feeling apprehensive, give security a call and we'll take care of you and get you where you need to go.
The program is used by anyone who feels unsafe.
Our service is utilized quite a bit by both staff, students, and visitors to our campus, and that's the whole point, right? To make people feel safe, to get them where they need to go, or out to the bus stop, out to the car. Sometimes people are just nervous walking in between buildings.
What would some students think about this program? Do some of them even use it?
Oh yeah, definitely, for sure. Sometimes at night it can get very dark and I wouldn't know where I'm going as well. Maybe I don't remember where I parked my car sometimes. So yeah, I definitely take the campus walk program at the nights.
I would use it because if I'm scared of going out in the campus at late at night, I would
To use this service, contact the security desk in the Gordon Willey Building, the Student Center, and the Student Service Building. In Oshawa, reporting for The Chronicle, I'm Will McAllister.
A first-year environmental technology student is using his personal journey to inspire others with the launch of a new program. Jonathan Grant has created the Free Mind Collective with the help of the Fast Start Entrepreneurship Center. As Ganga Rajesh reports, it's focused on mental health, addiction, and the environment.
Jonathan Grant's mission started with his own personal journey of overcoming challenges. He lost his mother at the age of 15 to cancer. Then he battled addiction and mental health challenges. Instead of them consuming him, he rose above by enrolling to Durham College, which eventually led to the foundation of Free Mind Collective. It'll offer workshops, panel discussion, retreats, and community outreach programs. Grant hopes these events will help others.
Just knowing how horrible I felt at times, I just know that I don't care who the person is, I don't think anyone should go through that alone.
Free Mind Collective is organizing farmers market and community cleanup event. And also, it's planning an epic cycling journey from Alaska to Argentina in 2025.
With this foundation, we're going to be able to bridge that gap between the people and, you know, kind of bring everyone together and then hopefully foster this idea that once our minds are better, we do have the power to help the planet as well.
Fast Start is providing Grant with technical support and space to launch his business. Grant will be at the Farmers Market in April at Durham College, and he's also planning a kickoff in July. From Oshawa, reporting for Chronicle, I am Ganga Rajesh.
It's not uncommon to see service animals on campus, particularly for people with PTSD or a disability. But in the general public, it's becoming increasingly common to see therapy animals. Sam Payne has more on what they are and why they're used.
We have two different dogs. We have a 13-year-old Dalmatian and an 8-year-old Golden Retriever, Aspen and Molly. And they go onto each of our patient units and they do one-to-one direct support. So it may look like just a slow pop in on a unit where a group program's happening, or it might be connecting with staff to find out who really has a passion for animals or connects with them.
Just having that that thing to motivate you is really good, especially during rehab. People that are older age homes, when they're trying to do their exercises or getting up, going down the stairs, it's just nice to have that extra motivation to like get you going and knowing that they're there for you. Even if they don't know it, they are there for you. Therapy dogs and therapy animals do help. They help a lot. I couldn't say it more. It just makes you feel more at home, more comfortable, and definitely reduces a lot of stress.
Community Living Oshawa Clarington is calling on the provincial government to provide more money for organizations like theirs, organizations that help people with cognitive disabilities. Brandon Rushton has the story.
Community Living Oshawa Clarington provides services to people with developmental disabilities such as Darlene to take part in community activities, life skills, and employment skills.
I'm more happier, more perky, outgoing, good person to give advice to when they can't speak for themselves. I'm there for them.
However, Community Living Oshawa Clarington says providing support for other people like her is becoming difficult.
Organizations such as CLOCK, and you know, those organizations are struggling to keep the heat on, keep the lights on, buy the, you know, put the gas in the vehicles and make sure we have the appropriate transportation. All those costs have gone up, and we've seen, you know, that less than 4% increase, and it's just becoming more and more impossible.
She says without an increase in federal funding, many of the services Community Living provides are at risk.
The reality is, though, if we're not successful, we're going to have to start reducing services, and a lot of other developmental service agencies are doing that already. So it's getting pretty tough for us.
One service that could be at risk is a monthly drumming circle.
I mean, that's just our... Not to get political, but that's our provincial government, right? Like, I'm sure they're not exactly friends with education, healthcare, or any of these social services.
Community living is important to so many people, including Darlene, who frequently gives speeches at schools such as Durham College about the importance of the organization to her.
Well, the biggest thing for CLOCK is I met a lot of new friends, and CLOCK has been like a family to me.
In Oshawa, reporting for The Chronicle, I'm Brandon Rushton.
A recent Ontario government investment in Indigenous wellness has been met with mixed responses. Advocates are pushing for change in how Indigenous wellness programs are run. Many say there's a need for culturally appropriate care, since these communities often have higher rates of poor mental health, with more people also at risk. Mackenzie Billings brings us the story.
The provincial government has recently invested over $2.6 million into mental health and addiction services in the Anishinaabe Aski Nation in Northern Ontario. This has sparked conversations about Indigenous wellness in other parts of the province, as some advocate for changes in the way Indigenous wellness programs are run in Ontario. Advocates are emphasizing the importance of communicating openly, listening to Indigenous communities, and giving them more power over their wellness.
It doesn't matter where you start, but it matters that you start. So we look at the medicine circle, we look at those four directions, we look at that and say, okay, where can I make a difference?
In 2021, people who identify as Indigenous were found to be at higher risk for suffering from poor mental health than those in other communities, according to Statistics Canada. This has led to a growing emphasis on incorporating opportunities for Indigenous peoples to access culturally appropriate care. According to Newhouse, who identifies as Onondaga from the Six Nations of the Grand River, culturally appropriate care means more than hiring additional professionals who are trained in the complex traumas of these communities.
Care is based in culture, right? Whether it's Western culture or Indigenous culture. When we talk about Indigenous culturally appropriate care, what we're talking about is a series of actions that are grounded in Indigenous understandings of care. And Indigenous understandings of wellness.
This is definitely something like that we need, because I feel that mental health is always especially overlooked by like the older generations versus our generation. It is an important thing that people struggle with in silence a lot of the time. it would be very important to have, especially with other communities.
Some experts in the field say while programs are important, so is the way they are funded.
We always have to adhere to these dates that the government sets. And so we're telling our community members, hurry up, you need to heal by March 31st. We need to like spend this money when community members might not be ready to like take part in a healing program or take part in this like thing. Maybe they're
in Oshawa. Reporting for the Chronicle, I'm Mackenzie Billard.
That's all we have today for news. Next up, we'll have sports.
Hi, I'm Will McAllister, and welcome to sports. In sports, the Oshawa Outlaws and the Whitby Seahawks are in the quarterfinals of the Arena Lacrosse League. The Outlaws play the Six Nations Snipers at 1 p.m. tomorrow, and the Seahawks play at 5 p.m. against the Oshawegon Bears. Both games will be played at Children's Arena in Oshawa. Meanwhile, the Oshawa general season is almost over, and the team is bound for the playoffs. The Gens have two games left on their regular season. They play tonight in Kitchener against the Rangers, and then host the Sudbury Wolves on Sunday. The Durham Lords men's basketball team made it to the playoffs this year after a long drought. They won a bronze medal game after several nail-biting games that almost took them to the final. Bavia Shaw has the story of how they hit a 17-game winning streak that led to their best finish in decades.
The Durham Lords men's basketball team beat the St. Clair Saints on 3rd March to clinch the bronze.
It's awesome for the team. They had an unbelievable season. Towards the end of the regular season, they were the number one team in the country, so it was quite exciting for us.
The team was captained by O'Shane Taylor Douglas.
I was happy that we got bronze. Honestly, that's not where we wanted to finish. You know, we had I set on gold.
Taylor Douglas had some takeaways from the season.
What I learned this year, how to be a leader, how to be a better leader, I would say, because we had a lot of young guys. So,
with the medal, Durham College won its sixth provincial medal of the 2023-24 season. And it's seventh medal overall.
From November 3rd onwards, the men's basketball team hadn't lost a game. They just kept winning and winning until they were 17-1, which is the best record they've ever had in a regular season.
Back in the Our 98- apologies for the technical difficulties, and we'll try to bring you that story later. If you enjoy playing video games or attending gaming conventions, Ontario Tech's annual GameCon is coming up soon. The Faculty of Business and IT and the Game Development Student Association are showcasing their student-created video games on April 4th. As Henna Palsar reports, you can expect to see many different kinds of games.
GameCon is a year-end convention where students collaborate in teams to celebrate the games they've worked on all year in the required course, Game Development Workshop.
All of the students were taking all of this material and working on big game projects that they were to design, develop, and deliver within the span of a single year. We wanted a place for them to be able to show off that work, and it kind of naturally followed that.
Rob says students are supposed to start drafting in January, but many students start planning even earlier, according to second-year student Lauren Olivier. Olivier's team, Chaos Theory, began its Pokemon, Earthbound, and Undertale-inspired game mid-November and have been working on it since then.
We kind of initially went off of, like, we wanted to kind of make some really fun characters, and I think that's basically how the game started. I was literally just making a little pixel art character, and they were like, that's the boss, and I was like, okay, cool.
Students will have their own booths, with some presenting virtual reality games, RPGs, or role-playing games, and other formats. The event is open to students, faculty, and company representatives from local gaming companies or larger corporations like Ubisoft. With 50 teams participating in GameCon this year, the Game Development Student Association and the Faculty of Business and IT plan to have the event in the UA, UB, and ERC buildings this year. In Oshawa, reporting for The Chronicle, I'm Henna Bausar.
That's all for sports. Next, we have arts and culture.
Welcome to Arts and Culture. I'm Bhavya Shah. 5 years ago, Durham College's Media and Art Design Department hosted its last 48-hour film challenge. The event was brought back earlier this month, but under a new name, the 48-hour Storytelling Challenge. Brendan Robbins has more.
This is something extracurricular that students went over and above to decide that they wanted to submit a work and create something that was outside of the framework of their course studies to have a chance to tell a story.
I think it's a good idea to include more mediums because people get to try different things. Like, I obviously do a lot of painting, but maybe next time I might try an illustration with like pen and paper, or maybe make a short film or an animation.
We've had great feedback. Some students say they would like a challenge to happen each semester, so that may happen.
February marked the second year of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. According to UNESCO, 343 heritage sites in Ukraine have been destroyed and can no longer be viewed. Many of these sites, though, have been documented through photography and are now being displayed in Whitby until May. Hannah Bhavsar and Ganga Rajesh have more.
Whitby Station Gallery has extended its dates for Ukrainian photographer Zinovy Pitperiora's exhibit, The Air of Freedom, Aerial Photographs of Ukraine. Curator Alexander Lesenko and Pitperiora's sister Nadia Sedorchuk, who lives in Canada, bought this exhibition together to preserve the history and knowledge of Ukraine.
Before Russia invaded Ukraine, Pitperiora began taking aerial photographs as a hobby. The restriction on airspace for civilians put a halt to his work, but he and his sister still aim to highlight the country's architecture.
Because first days of war, nobody knew what would be left. And I wanted to to show that this is Ukraine, this is our beautiful country.
One of the many places targeted is Ternopil, the family's hometown. According to Sitochuk, the town has faced destruction many times throughout the years.
And only castle exists now from the first settlement of the city. Town was completely destroyed by First World War, then Second World War, and especially, this is history and repeating by Russian, by Soviet Union, by Russian. It's very sad. And
curator Wilisenko hopes these photographs will one day help reconstruct these damaged buildings.
It really showcases that rather than seeing the aerial photographs now of the destruction that the Russian Federation has caused since its full-scale invasion, an exhibition like this also points to the hope of rebuilding Ukraine and to bring it back to its great significance.
The exhibition runs until May 5th.
In Whitby, reporting for The Chronicle, I am Ganga Rajesh.
And I'm Hena Bhavsar.
This week, the Living Room's big blue bus stopped by Durham College to give students a chance to create art while also meeting new people. Students could also take part in art in the pit, where students could make art on their own or with friends. As Jaylene Mosher reports, experts say art is more important for the mind, body, and soul.
Art is used in many ways. For some, recreationally, for others, it is a career, but for most, it can be used to heal the mind.
It's the actual physicality of the art making, and that can be therapeutic in and of itself.
Daly says there are two types of art therapy, directive or non-directive. In one, she guides the person on what to draw or do. And with the other, the client is encouraged to gravitate to the art tools that interest them.
As long as it's, you're also touching on some verbal cues or conversation about the actual problem that the person's dealing with.
Daly says art therapy can be helpful for many things, including trauma, mental health, behavioral, and relational issues.
And it can be something that really is a tactile presentation of what's going on.
Art can be done at any age, from youth to elder, and Daly encourages it, and so does Durham College with their free art in the pit.
It can be, the creative process is a process of creation, so it's a positive activity. It's a productive activity.
In Oshawa, reporting for The Chronicle, I'm Jalen Mosher.
Just over a year ago, Crownlands released its most popular song yet, Lady of the Lake. The Oshawa rock band has been in the industry for many years, creating different types of music. Take a listen to this fan favorite from the group's most recent album, Fearless.
Yeah.
While many of us dread the year-end projects, students in the fine arts program get to do something a bit more personal. Third-year students have been working all year towards a major assignment. Matthew Mountjoy brings us the stories behind their art thesis projects.
So my project, it's mostly an installation of sculptures using a lot of found objects, and I like to mix and match and put them together with a sort of concept that I have in my head. Right now the theme, it's been ever changing and evolving, and it's a reflection of how I feel my life's journey has gone so far. This piece, it's really all been about learning more about myself, how I operate and navigate through life, what I've learned along the way, what I look forward to, and just all about being in the now. The idea just kind of came to me. I mean, a lot of people are working on paintings and sculptures, and I was trying to force myself to come up with this idea of doing a bunch of paintings or doing a bunch of sculptures, but I had a hard time landing on a concept idea for it. And so I just kind of looked to what I do in my everyday life and who I am and how I came to art in the first place. And that was through going on walks and finding objects, and I'd pick them up or draw them or fasten them into some sort of sculpture piece. And that's where I got the idea to go along with this, and just took aspects from my life that I enjoy and have fun doing and just kind of made it bigger.
So my thesis is it's based on myself. So it's like one big fragmented self-portrait, and it's about like my insecurities and my struggles with mental health like through my life. And it's kind of like a way for me to like tell people without telling people. And it's kind of breaking down that wall of like fear of people finding out kind of thing. So last year we did a project of the self, and it was a self-portrait project. And that's when I did the face portrait. And after that, it was such a big like inspiration for me, because I was like, oh my gosh, wow, like I'm capable of doing like this much, like how much more can I do after that? And it really just sprung like this entire idea. And then after I painted the hands in the same year, and then I knew that this was going to be my thesis project, because it could just keep going and going and going. Probably like the most free I've felt in this whole program, because it's really just exploring who I am and who I will be like once I leave here. And it's just, I don't know, it feels like I'm spreading my wings.
Yeah, so my project is about the unspoken conversations you have within your own relationships in your life. So all of my paintings revolve around each other and look like they're kind of dynamically dancing with each other. There's going to be sculptural pieces coming out of different portions of them, interacting with the other paintings, as well as a center bust. So I'm in the process of building an Ionic column, and I'm going to have a plaster cast bust of myself on it, and they're all going to be interacting. So it's kind of the group dynamic aspect of relationships and like how everyone interacts with each other. And like, you know, if you went further than just my thesis, you could go into one specific person's painting and do the same thing with theirs and how their relationships interact. And yeah, it's, I'm really interested in psychology, so it's kind of all that brought together.
Even just seeing my friends just paint, honestly, paint or do art, it's so cool. Like I love doing art myself, but I love like seeing my friends do it themselves. Like it's just so like, just, I don't know, it's so, I guess intriguing is the word, but also just like, I love seeing how they, like, the way they paint, the reason they paint. I'm saying paint like just in general, like, you know, how they do art, like digital drawing, whatever. But I've seen the variety, I guess is the word. Like, it's just cool to me.
The art pieces will be on display for the general public, starting with an opening ceremony on May 3rd, running until June 9th.
This week, a classic game took place in the DC Fieldhouse, Cornhole.
The tournament was hosted by sports management students. Gage Barry and Simran Deb were there and bring us the action.
A new kind of game made its way to Ontario Tech and Durham College. Cornhole. The two-hour event was held by students in the sport management program as part of an assignment. Anyone could register, with proceeds going towards scholarships for the program. Joey Lewis, one of the four students that helped organize the event, said there were 16 registrations and 8 teams of 2 playing.
You know, honestly, it exceeded. Because, you know, I think one of the things we really worried about was trying to who's really going to actually come to a cornhole tournament. You know, obviously not that many people are invested with the sport or the event. So I think the amount of people, the amount of teams that came out, I think we're happy with the turnout.
Well, cornhole is mostly a summer sport here in Canada. In America, it's a lot more common. There even is a professional league.
To play cornhole, players take turns in teams, throwing a fabric beanbag at a raised angled board with a hole at the very end. Players can win by landing the bag onto the board, which gives them 1 point, or putting a bag through the hole, which gives them 3 points. Many play it just for fun, but some take the game very seriously by playing in tournaments. Brock Taylor played with Team Beach Jits and said the heart of cornhole is simply having a good time.
So cornhole is kind of like a fun family game, outdoor game, just kind of a relaxing game that everyone can play. No skill level, anyone can just pick up a bag and throw it.
While the game is for fun, the competitive spirit runs strong in the game, and it didn't stop some people from throwing some lighthearted banter at the opposing players.
Don't diss the two team.
I feel like it's more like competitive to like kind of beat them and like leave tickets on the line too. So I feel like that's like more of like a competitive nature for sure. Like battling with like your in program buddies too. So I guess like we just kind of like fight each other all the time. It's just like competitive sport. Everything's sport.
We're looking to win too.
Yeah, exactly. We're here to win. So.
With 8 teams playing, only one could come out on top. That team being Crane Holio from the Crane Operation Program at the Whitby campus.
Pretty good.
It feels pretty good. It's the first time I've won something like this, so.
From Oshawa, reporting for The Chronicle, I'm Gage Patty.
And I'm Simran Deb.
Oshawa Little Theatre is hosting a production of Into the Woods. The story is about many beloved fairy tale characters as they face challenges and have to make tough choices, some of which have consequences. The production runs from March 28th into early April, and tickets can be purchased on Oshawa Little Theatre's website. Here's It Takes Two. In this version, we hear Emily Blunt and James Corden. Listen for a sneak peek of what the Oshawa Theatre production is about to bring you.
You've changed. You're daring. You're different in the woods. More sure. More sharing. You're getting us through the woods. If you could see, you're not the man who started, and much more open-hearted than I knew you to be.
It takes two. I thought one was enough. It's not true. It takes two of us. You came through when the journey was rough. It took you. It took two of us. It takes care. It takes patience and fear and despair to change. Though you swear to change, you can tell if you do. It takes two.
You've changed. You're thriving. There's something about the woods. Not just surviving. You're blossoming in the woods. At home, I'd fear we'd stay the same forever. And then out here, your passion, a charming, consider a clever.
It takes one to begin, but then once you've begun, it takes two of you, it's no fun. But what needs to be done, you can do when there's two of you. If I tear, it's because I'm becoming aware of us as a pair of us, each accepting a share of what's there.
We've changed. We're strangers. I'm meeting you in the woods. Who minds what dangers? I know we'll get past the woods. And once we're past, let's hope the changes last. Beyond woods, beyond witches and slippers and hoods.
just the two of us beyond lies, safe at home with our beautiful prize. Just a few of us, it takes trust, it takes just a bit more and we're done. We want four, we had none, we've got three, we need one, it takes two.
Over reading week, while many of us were sleeping in or catching up on homework, a group of students from the School of Media, Art and Design were on a different journey. They were in San Felipe, Xenla, a mountain community in northwestern Guatemala, working with Mayan High School students to learn about their culture and make stories together. Dylan Irving is in the video production program and Danny Opatinas is in the advertising and promotion program. They were among 12 students on the trip. They are here to tell us more. So why were you interested in the Guatemala trip?
That's a good question. I got an email and it sounded cool. I mean, I've been to a couple of places in Latin America and the trip seemed very enriching. So I had to sign up.
Amazing.
Yeah, I had a close friend of mine go on the trip last year. So hearing about all the experiences that they went through just really inspired me to reach out and try to be a part of it.
That's great. What was your overall experience like?
It's hard to put that experience into words. It was like probably the best experience I've had in the last few years, at least. It was life-changing, to say the least.
If you ever get the experience, it's like a must. It was learning outside of the classroom is very, very different, and I feel like it gave us so much more than any other credit could have.
Why it was life-changing?
Well, I wasn't really prepared for all the friendships and the bonds I would make with everybody while I was there. So going into it, I wasn't expecting all the love and appreciation from everybody. But becoming like close with so many people in such a short amount of time, and then having to say goodbye, it was crazy. It was a very insane experience.
What about you?
Yeah, it was definitely the people that we met, I would say. Like being there and getting able to like teach the kids in their community some of the knowledge that we get from our traditional schooling here, and learning from them some of the knowledge that they have from their traditional like Mayan culture. That exchange was so important, and I think it definitely did a lot for us in terms of like how we're gonna act being people in the world or adults in the world, you know?
That's amazing. What did you learn from the trip?
I learned a lot from the trip.
Guatemala gets cold. we didn't pack. We packed a lot of shorts and t-shirts. And then we got there. It's like 0 degrees nights. It was freezing. Little things that you can't assume about a country. But moreover, it's like the people there have such a love for like the land that they grew on and the people around them and their community. And it doesn't matter like what you have that's tangible, like in material wise. Like you can be so happy living a different type of life, you know what I mean? It's just a different way of looking at the world, I guess.
100%, I agree.
Okay, amazing. What is a memory that you will remember forever from this trip?
That's a good question.
That is a good question. There's so many of them.
If you want to say a specific one.
The traveling with the group was definitely very cool. I mean, like traveling those long, long hours, as a group from Durham College kept us all really, really close, and I feel like I learned a lot about everybody.
Yeah, we became like a family over the span of like a day of traveling, and then ever since then we've all been pretty close. I think one of my most memorable things from the trip would be the friendships I made with a few of the students, in particular Johnny. I met a student out there, and we just became best friends immediately, and like we're still even texting like to the like last night we were texting and sending photos, and he's got to be like probably like one of the greatest people I've ever met. Especially
all of the students from Guatemala we've been talking to nonstop since we got home. We're like, those are like lifelong bonds now that we have, especially since they're so far away. It's very, very cool.
It's really nice to make lifelong connections from a school study trip. What advice would you give to the students going on the trip next year?
Pack a a really warm sleeping bag.
A very warm sleeping bag and like multiple towels, because if you're using a cold towel in that freezing, like it gets so cold. Especially the time of year that we went. You'll meet Noe. Noe was our guide. He's like a Guatemala staple. He was probably the coolest guy ever and one of the most prepared people ever. Bring your own sunscreen. If you don't bring your own sunscreen, Noe's got it somewhere.
Noe is the most prepared human I've ever met.
Yeah, it's
crazy. He makes sure everything, all of your needs are like taken care of before you even think about it.
Don't give yourself any reasons like not to apply. Like if it's something that comes across your table and you think that you'd be interested in it, just gun for it. Like it's genuinely one of the coolest trips out there. And the more that you stay engaged, especially meeting people there, like the more times we can get to do that trip again and more kids get to have that experience. And it's a very, very cool thing.
Yeah.
Amazing. It was nice to hear about your experience in Guatemala. Dylan Irving is in the video production program and Danny Hopasenis is in the advertising and promotion program. They were on a faculty-led classroom abroad trip to Guatemala over Reading Week.
It's rare to see college students without headphones or AirPods in their ears, and it makes us wonder, what are they listening to? So we went around Durham College's Oshawa campus to see what students have on play, and we found out it wasn't just music.
Thank you for watching today's Chronicle on Riot Radio Show. Hey Andre, how are you feeling now that our final show of the year is done?
No, it's crazy. We've had a lot of time spent together and I'm curious to see where everyone goes to and where they end up in their life.
I agree. We all have grown from the first time we made a broadcast story to now.
For sure, but before we close, just a reminder to follow us on Instagram at DCUIT Chronicle.
You can also find all our stories online at chronicle.durham.ca.
Now, before we officially leave, we have one more song.
Mark Villadal is a 66-year-old musician from Oshawa who's making music both alone and with his band, The Doctors. He is known to draw on his life experience to create his music. His newest song, Searching for True Love, is about love, want, and heartache.